Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Out of sight of most Americans, global corporations are rapidly buying up local water sources. This morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll look at this trend and also talk about some of the ways that communities around the world have organized to resist this privatization of their water. And our guest for the program is Alan Snedow. He is an award-winning documentary filmmaker and journalist and one of the authors of a recently published book that explores this subject. The title is Thirst, Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water. The book is published by Jossi Bass and is recently out. It also was the subject of the subject of a documentary that he and his co-authors Deborah Kaufman and Michael Fox were involved in that aired as part of the PBS series POV. So it's possible some of the people listening to us saw that. If you're interested certainly in exploring the topic, you can go out and look for the book. And as we talk here this morning, questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions from listeners are certainly welcome. The only thing we ask is that people just try to be brief so that we can keep moving along. But anybody who is interested in joining the conversation can do that here locally again, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mr. Snedow, hello.
Hello.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Snedow is fine.
Snedow. Okay, good. Well, thank you very much for talking with us. We certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
How is this, and I know that you were involved in this in a documentary that aired, I guess, a couple of years ago, so you have been dealing with this subject for some time. What was it that drew your interest?
Well, we live in California, and one of the realities of life here is that there are constant battles over how the water, the inadequate supply of water in California to some extent, is going to be divided between the north part of the state and the south part of the state. And then a few years back, we had a little incident with a company called Enron that you may have heard about, in which Enron took advantage of electricity deregulation in California to siphon billions of dollars into its corporate coffers. And we discovered that Enron was one of the largest water companies in the world, that they were planning to do more or less with water what they had done with electricity in California, if they could sort of corner the market, raise the price, and sell it to a public who had no choice but to buy. And this was a template of a tendency, perhaps not quite as corrupt a tendency, but nevertheless a tendency that we saw suddenly popping up all over the place, that because there was so much potential for water scarcity, that this public service could be transformed into a private profit source.
Mm-hmm. I think there you're touching on an important point, and I think from time to time we here on the program have tried to talk about water issues here in our area, and I think that it is true that many people in many places in the United States have for a long time now been able to take water for granted. Certainly in the West, there people have been concerned about water issues for a long time. But I think that more and more in other parts of the country, in Florida, for example, which might seem surprising since there's water all around it, because of the drought, the serious drought we have experienced now this year, parts of the Southeast, and here, even in our area, where water is plentiful, but demand continues to increase, I think that it's an issue that maybe almost no matter where you live, eventually it's going to be an issue, and people are going to have to be much more conscious about their water use.
Well, especially in places where there is water, are now much more going to be vulnerable to places that don't have water. One of the processes that we look at in the book is that over the past 30 years, a lot of people have moved into the Sun Belt states, and the congressional delegations in the Southwest and the Southeast and in the West Coast have risen enormously, while the Midwestern and the Great Lakes states, has gone down enormously. And there is a kind of thirsty sense from Arizona and New Mexico about, look at all that water up there in the Midwest and in the Great Lakes, and love to be able to take advantage of some of that. And the same fear is expressed by a lot of people in Canada that that there's a desire to siphon some of that enormous resources that are there. And one of the sort of wonderful things about water, but also the vulnerabilities of water, is that it is a fabulous thing in its local area. It is the center and what the creator of a local of an environment, and it is a kind of local resource. But it also can be taken elsewhere, and we've seen that in many parts of the world and in the United States. And it's a big danger. You can really transform your environment totally.
Mm-hmm. Can you say? Can you put rough numbers on the numbers of water systems in the United States that are publicly held and that are, so how many are publicly held and how many are in private hands?
Well, 85% of Americans get their water from public water systems. So the other side, the 15% are people get it from private systems. But there are actually a large number of private systems, most of them extremely tiny. And these are not owned by multinational or gigantic corporations. They're places that are in suburban or semi-rural areas with 500 customers, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But so that the real major water providers in the country are in almost all cases public water supplies. And this has been a tradition for about 100 years. 100 years ago, at the end of the 19th century, there had been private water supply, and what happened was that they found out that, one, they weren't getting the water was polluted, the leakage was so terrible that you couldn't produce any kind of development, and so city after city took over control of their water future and turned it over to engineers, turned it over to professionals, turned it over into a public service, provided tax-exempt bond funding and so on, and took it out of private hands. And that's the way it's been now for 100 years. And one of the sparks for both our movie and our book, Thirst, was that we saw the potential for this to be changed, a real sea change, if you will, on who owned and controlled water, moving from a public service that was by the government into private hands for private profit.
Mm. Well, what is it? Is there something going on, or are there some number of factors that would lead a large multinational corporation, and apparently there are several that are big players in the water business, mm-hmm. that would lead a corporation like that to look around the United States or elsewhere to look at public water systems and to consider that to be a good opportunity for them to attempt to come in and buy some of those?
Well, the key thing I think that's been going on is that because you have population increase, because you also have global warming and increased water scarcity, there is no longer the possibility for people to assume that their water supplies are just going to always be there whenever they turn on the tap or flush the toilet. It has been called into question. And when you have a scarcity, then it makes it possible to consider the idea that you're going to be able to raise prices on water. Right now, prices are kept somewhat artificially low because you want everyone to be able to afford it. It's a universal service. I mean, it's really one of the amazing rights that has existed to some extent in the United States, that you can actually get water that you can afford, you know, even if you don't have much money. The idea is that you could now start to change this. And this opportunity really came to the fore in the late 90s when, under the Clinton administration, there was a rule change that allowed companies to come in and sign contracts with local municipalities to take over their water services for a period up to 20 years. In the past, it had only been 5 years. And once you're talking about 20 years, then you're really talking about de facto control and operation by the private company. Then you're talking about enough of a window of time for them to make not only their their nut back, but some significant profit as well. And that was the big incentive. Immediately, once that rule change took place, three major companies, first Veolia and Suez in France, and then RWE in Germany, bought the largest water companies in the United States, some of which are very active in the Midwest, particularly American Water, which is owns water services in places like Peoria and in Champaign-Urbana, I believe.
Yes,
indeed. So there was the opportunity for these companies now to try to greatly expand their customer base. And when we talked to the head lobbyist of the for the water industry in Washington, D.C., he said, well, you know, it's 85% public to 15% private. We'd like to move toward reversing those figures to really making it so that the private water market is really what dominates public provision of services in the United States. And that would be a tremendous transformation because you're talking about an industry that has trillions of dollars of assets. I mean, this is an enormous industry that's mostly underground and out of sight or doesn't smell too good, and people avoid thinking about it. But it is the thing that sort of undergirds our civilization just like every other civilization, that the way the water is delivered or the way it's parceled out is really defines the structure of what your civilization, what your government, what your economy is all about.
And you, just to underscore this, you believe that, you say that there's reason to believe that one result of a water system going from public to private is that rates would go up.
Correct. Rates in privately owned systems are universally higher than the public systems next door, for the ratepayers. And this is we've seen this in study after study around the country, all parts of the country, that the rates are higher. I mean, they have to also add on top of things a profit. They have to pay taxes. They don't get the same tax exempt bonds. There's a whole number of things that that are done there, and that the rates are going to be higher if you've got a privately owned system.
Let me introduce quickly again our guest, and we have a caller and would invite others. Alan Snitow is an award-winning documentary filmmaker and journalist. He is the one of the makers of a film titled Thirst that explores this very subject that aired as part of the PBS series POV, and now it has been published in a book form. So if you're interested in reading more on this subject, you can look for the book. The title is Thirst, Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water. Jossie Bass is the publisher. And again, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have some callers here. We'll start with someone who is in Champaign, and that's line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just tuned in, and you're right, talking about our neighborhood. So I apologize if this is a repeat, but it's something that concerns me greatly. We have a wonderful supply of water here. You may have even heard of the Mahomet Aquifer, but we are building up rapidly, and we need it. And there are, as you have already talked about, who owns our water company now, so I won't go into that. But there are outlying areas in the county or two away that are forming up their own water companies to provide water, which I certainly want everyone to have a good, clean supply of water. But one of the ways they are obtaining their water is buying it from our company. And while we have this wonderful supply that many people seem to think is a bottomless pit, I am concerned about our water company selling our water into other areas of the state and nation, wherever they want to sell it, because it is such good water, and it's worth maybe more to them selling it to other companies than to just keeping it for us in this area. I'm wondering if this has happened in other places, and you know, how can this be dealt with or be learned about, or can people be educated about this situation?
You know, what's happening is that water is becoming a commodity.
Yes, correct.
And it's being and I don't want us to sort of think that, oh, the public sector is wonderful and the private sector is all evil. There's a role for the private sector in water. It's just that management, ownership, and control, I don't think, are among the things that the private sector should have. But you also have the public sector doing things like starting to sell water, starting to take water out of one watershed and take it into another in order to make enough money to support their own operations back in their because they're not getting enough funding. There's constant problems that exist in all of these water systems, many of which have outdated equipment or have a lot of leakage, and they don't have enough money to pay for the infrastructure. And what they're doing is they're starting to sell their water in order to be able to update their infrastructure. I think this is something that's happening in a number of places. And the reason it's happening is that we're not investing. You know, we're seeing bridges fall in one city. We're seeing steam pipes blow up in the middle of another. We're seeing levees fall or be endangered in other states and in other crises that are potential or real. And our infrastructure in this country is really falling apart because we haven't put in the money to keep it up.
But how can we discourage a German company? I mean, they're here. They bought the water company.
Mm-hmm.
How can we discourage them from, as you say, I mean, they want to make money, and they can make a lot of money selling our water to other companies, some of them small private companies, and we have nothing to say about that.
Right, and that's one of the dangers of it being really in private hands.
Once you've got
that motivation of that they're going to try to make money off your water, then they want to start to sell it. And public companies can do this too, but I think it's much more of an incentive and a drive to make money from expansion of the service area. That is the way these companies really make their money. It's not so much by just raising rates, which they can do, but also because there's new housing developments, which private companies are going to be supporting and saying, we want more housing development or bigger regional development, because we then have more customers and we'll make higher profits.
So
and the same thing when they're selling bulk water, which it sounds like what they're proposing to do.
Well, they've been approached by other companies that are just starting up, and they have been approached to sell water to other companies in surrounding areas and throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it seems to me we have there's very little we can do about that, and I don't know that having the city on the water company would be an improvement. But I just thought you might know how these things have been dealt with in other areas or even other countries.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that the city taking over its water supply is definitely going to be a situation at least in which the ratepayers and the people in the city are going to have a lot more democratic input. Their elected representatives are going to have much more significant control over what goes on in the water system. If you've got a private company that's based in Essen, as the one in Champaign-Urbana is, in Germany, you have a situation in which the transparency of the company, of your water service, is much less than it would be under government control. It's very hard to get information out of private companies. I mean, that's one of the major problems that people have, that they don't know what's going on sometimes in the economy. Even the Federal Reserve Board can't figure out half the time what's going on anymore because they don't have enough of a information flow and they can't get the information that they need. So you're going to have that kind of problem, and they're going to start to deal. And this has been a situation in other parts of the country. I hadn't heard it as sort of as advanced as this, but of course it has been something that has been done in other places where water agencies are trying to make a profit by selling their water to other municipalities.
So again, the bottom line is here, if this is a private company, they essentially own the resource. There is nothing that consumers could do to prevent them from doing that?
I think that you would have to, the consumers can band together, I think, to try to block this by taking it probably to the Public Service Commission, I believe, in the state. It would be the one that would have to clear such approaches, or the Department of Water would have to approve whether or not you could actually do this. And that's the place where suddenly you're back in the public sector of regulators, and hopefully then people can be involved in trying to influence that. Mm. And citizens groups can be extremely powerful in that regard, but they have to be well organized, they have to be consistent, and they have to be able to work over time, because a big water company has an enormous lobbying and campaign finance and legal teams that work for them full-time, working to try to control what the regulators will do. It's even got a name. It's called regulatory capture. And in a lot of places, when private companies take over water systems, they begin to actually control the regulators who are supposed to be overseeing them.
I want to thank the last caller and go on to someone else. We have a couple of people here in Urbana, and the next is in line number two. Hello.
This is all very scary stuff, and I don't see it getting much better because we keep allowing our population to increase, and the mood of the country, and politicians play off on this, is everyone for themselves and not community. Politicians are excoriated for raising taxes. We talk about it being our personal money. We never talk about the tax money that's being spent. This is true, but I don't hear the political discourse talking about community and what is good for the community. I have been thinking about the drought in the southeastern part of the U.S., and I hear, don't wash your car and don't water your lawn, and I'm thinking, well, why aren't we encouraging people to use grass seed that doesn't need much water? Why aren't we encouraging people to take sponge baths instead of long showers? Multiple things people can do to reduce their use of water, and it's going to get worse as our population gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I was thinking that people might begin to be forced to start doing more conservation. And then I heard on public radio that some people with lots of money and lots of money in their landscapes, instead of bowing to the need to conserve water, we're digging private wells and tapping the underground water supplies that everybody depends on. Even when you have water coming out of a river, the river is fed by underground water in part. Rivers and streams are. They're also fed by rainwater, but also from the underground. If we take all the water, if we lower the water table, streams and rivers are going to have a lot less water in them. It seems like a very complex problem, but I'm going to have to get your book. But I want to raise those issues with listeners, because we need to think about what we each can do, and we need to talk with others. We need to develop peer pressure about these issues.
You know, one thing that we focus on in the book and the movie is citizens' movements. Occurred in Urbana and Peoria, for example, to take back water supplies from private companies, multinational companies. But this question of people making a commodity out of water or privatizing their own futures by doing their own wells is sort of come to be now an extreme case in Texas, where an oil man named Boone Pickens has decided he's got a huge spread of land in northern Texas that he's going to put a straw into the ground into the Ogallala Aquifer, a gigantic aquifer that runs throughout the plains states, and suck out water and sell it, build a pipeline for about $1 billion or more dollars, and sell it to some of the major cities in Texas. And without really asking anyone, because the law allows people just to sort of suck water out of the ground in Texas and do whatever they want with it, you get some pretty extreme situations which show the degree to which our country is so used to and assumes the presence of water, and that we can exploit at will natural resources. I mean, this was always the case with forests, for example. Our whole orientation toward resources has been one of exploitation of these vast resources for private profit. And we're reaching sort of the end of that period of history in the United States where we can really afford to allow our environment to be used in that way. We have to have much more sustainable systems. We have to deal with conservation a great deal more. There is enormous potential for conservation to be the means by which we're able to both grow but also maintain pure water supplies. But in all of these cases, we have to invest in doing so. And it's not so much a question of raising taxes, because right now you may have noticed that the federal government is going into some extraordinary debt to fight the war in Iraq. The amount of that we spend in Iraq in about 2 weeks would fund the annual amount, the gap, that we need to update our water systems around the country. That is, you know, an absurdity that of where our priorities as a nation have turned out to be. And that's why I think a lot of people are now pressing for some kind of trust fund, a federal trust fund for water, like there is a federal trust fund for highways, a federal trust fund for building airports. There should be one for water, because keeping our water supply clean, keeping it public, and keeping it updated is really an essential thing. And what has been found has been that 86% of Americans support the idea of a federal trust fund for water. Whether President Bush will veto it or not, as we've just seen, water issues are something which actually bring Republicans and Democrats together, and they overrode the first veto on a water bill. So there's tremendous potential to bring together coalitions of people around water issues in local areas as well as around the country in order to be able to change the direction of the country itself, of how we're investing, of how we're thinking about natural resources, of how we're thinking about sustainability.
We are at our midpoint here, and I have a couple of other callers, and we'll get right to them, but I would like to just quickly introduce again our guest, Alan Snitow. He's an award-winning documentary filmmaker and journalist. He and his partner, Deborah Kaufman, who is also a film producer, director, writer, they made a documentary dealing with this subject that aired as part of the PBS series POV back in 2004, and now they, along with Michael Fox, have put this out in a book form. And so if you would like to look more at this issue, the title is Thirst, Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water. Joss Bass is the publisher, and I'm sure you can find it out in the bookstore. Questions, comments are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's next go to, Urbana, and that would be line number three. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Is your name Alan Snitown, S-N-I-T-O-W-N? Is that what it is?
No, N at the end. It's S-N-I-T-O-W.
Okay, thank you. My question is something that you said back a little while ago. The what happened, what was the reason that these foreign companies were able to come into the United States and buy three of the best water supplies?
Well, what's happened is that We've seen the globalization of virtually everything, where you have companies running around the world and purchasing other companies, developing manufacturing in China or in India, outsourcing and so on. And to some extent, we are getting a little bit of you're seeing that here as well. In this case, you had three of the world's largest 100 corporations come into the United States with the idea of having a major impact on water services in the United States, and the spark for their coming in was not only that water was now becoming a commodity that people were going to buy and sell in their view, but also that there were rule changes which allowed them to take over or contract to take over a city's water supply.
What did you say,
years.
Rule changes?
Yeah, it was Internal Revenue Service had rules about how long the length of time a private contract for a water system could run, and it had limited the length of those contracts to 5 years, and they changed the rule to 20 years after an enormous amount of lobbying.
Oh, so they made it 20 years that somebody else could come in and run the water companies.
That's right.
Changed it from 5 years to 20 years. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, well, thank you. And we'll continue. We'll talk next with someone in also Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Unfortunately, I'm sure that administrative control by the city of the water process here in Urbana is not a viable alternative. I say that because the city has shown it is irresponsible in controlling costs. Its property taxes go up at 3 and 4 times the rate of inflation. It would become, in effect, another MTD. MTD goes for, it also doubles, triples its the inflationary rate on its yearly income, and we have buses running at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. If you don't believe me, go over on campus, 40-foot buses, and when the students let out, then they're still running. There's absolutely no profit incentive to cut costs. In fact, they get as much as they can, and then in the very rare times when they do ask for public input, they hold their meetings at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday, and when most working people can't even get there. So it's, from my viewpoint, it's certainly not a viable alternative to let the city run the water company.
Okay, well, here we're getting into some very local and related but side issues. I guess I would like to come back though to the general point, whether you, in how many cases it really would be, if you have a privately held water company, in how many cases it would actually be feasible to think about municipal takeover. And I mean, certainly it's the kind of thing that has been discussed with other kinds of utilities as well, here and elsewhere. I mean, is that really a reasonable alternative?
Well, it's been done in a number of places. So I suppose you could say it's reasonable. I don't think it's easy. Mm-hmm. American Water really fights hard, for example, against eminent domain by local municipalities to take over their water companies. There was a success in that in a small town in California, Monterra. Another town, Fenton in California, is trying to do it. There is in Fort Wayne is now trying to use eminent domain to take back control of their water company. It's not easy, and they'll fight it, but it certainly is something which is a possibility and which is being done more and more around the country. We just had the situation in Stockton, California, which was the largest water privatization deal in the western United States, after a battle which we showed in the movie over a privatization there, where it was a very narrow vote by the city council to take control of their, to give control of the water system to a private company. Several years later, with some severe problems arising in the water system, the city voted unanimously in the city council to take the water system back. This was a real blow. This was, you know, the largest privatization. To some extent, this was the showcase privatization in the West, and it failed after about just 3 years of a 20-year contract. So it is possible. It means tenaciously following what the company is doing, informing a local population, creating coalitions. But it seems to be happening around the country, and I think that's because people have a kind of really visceral response to the idea of a private company taking control of their water supply, of people profiting from something as basic to life as water. And to go back to what the caller was asking about, doubts about the public sector, I think that there's good reason to have doubts about the public sector. It's really important that citizens get involved in their public sector, in the governing process, and in keeping tabs over what government does. But one of the differences between public service and private company is that public service offers you the opportunity to do so. You have the transparency, you can get the information, and you can organize to have an impact. If you've got a private company, it's much, much more difficult to deal with the impact of its control over your water service. You have to take back control before you can have much impact. And that's the that's the real, one of the real differences between the two. You have to be involved in water issues now. We can no longer take it for granted.
All right, let's talk with someone else. This is going to next be someone in Champaign and line number two.
Hello? Hi, good morning. To your last caller, I think he needs to get a life and to realize that what we're talking about here is control of our water. That when we ceded control, I don't think any of us quite understood how important that was, and that we certainly need to see what we can do about getting that control back. The other thing is, I'm just calling to make a suggestion, David, that you have somebody maybe from the Water Survey and maybe a local politician or two, someone from one of the county committees perhaps, get a group of people on the air to talk about this and to answer questions. And I just think the public here is kind of asleep. I don't think the Muhammad Aquifer is bottomless. And I think it's a real danger to not have control of your water. And the idea that somebody else from a European country owns our water is frightening.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Actually, for the last couple of years, I don't think we did it this summer, but the last couple of years we did a show. Admittedly, it was only one show, but we had a show with the head of the Water Survey here to talk about regional water issues. And I thought it was very interesting and also was very important to raise those issues. So I think it's a fine suggestion, and we'll see what we can do about it.
And a question to your guest. Is it possible, and are there places in this country, rather than taking it city by city, because our aquifer feeds so much of this area, is it possible to get a regional approach to this, and, you know, with citizen input and so forth, in order to take control back?
Not only is it possible, but I think that you have to do that. Whether or not that works as a way of taking back control, for example, in the city of Urbana, is another question. But ultimately, when you've got a watershed or you've got an aquifer, if you have somebody tapping one end of that aquifer, a lot of other people could be affected. So you have to have some kind of control of groundwater and your surface water as we move into this new era of greater population and of climate change, in which really we're seeing dramatic transformations in our environment. The Great Lakes, I believe, now are at their lowest level in about 20 to 25 years. We've seen for the first time Wisconsin, they recently did a study, and they were finding that there was so much water being drawn by farmers and municipalities in Wisconsin that water was actually being drawn out through the bottom of the lake into the pumps on land in Wisconsin. So we are changing our environment now by the demands that we're putting on it. We have to begin to figure out regional ways in which we work with the environment. And, you know, our government's policies are completely off kilter on this. When you consider that the Bush administration is subsidizing to a vast degree ethanol production, with which is corn, which is very water intensive, uses a lot of fungicides that are very dangerous, that are banned in other parts of the world, and then the ethanol plants use a great deal of water to produce ethanol. You've got a serious crisis that's developing, and now there are little uprisings again by citizens groups, and I've heard of them in Missouri and Iowa and in Arkansas, against the construction of ethanol plants. Our water is something that people have to be involved in, and we do have to take a very, you know, broad idea, because it's flowing, it's moving all the time. The wonder and delight of water as a resource is this extraordinary property that it has, but at the same time that becomes a vulnerability, because when we pollute in one place, it's going somewhere else. When we take it out in one place, someone else is going to be affected. So there has to be broad, at least watershed-wide for surface water, and also groundwater regulation or regional coordination, because otherwise our water resources are going to be endangered.
Again, I want to thank the last caller and to go on to some others and tell people who are listening we have about 10 minutes left in this hour of Focus. Alan Snitow is our guest. He is an award-winning filmmaker, journalist, and is the co-author of a book that explores the subject. So if you would like to read more about it, look for the book. It's titled Thirst, Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water. We have some other folks here. We have somebody on cell phone. We'll go right to them. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello. I'm probably in the same camp with most of the callers who find the trend ominous and disturbing. But I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute. It seems that if, you know, a corporation has control of water, something like free water for ethanol would go away because the company could no longer say, the ethanol company could no longer say, well, water's free. We can negate that cost. We're just going to, you know, pump it out of the ground. Now they have to pay for it. Obviously, there are other ways to set that up, but it seems like some of the worst abuses would go away if under this type of corporate influence, because they're not going to give it away. So I'd like you to address that point.
Okay.
I'll take first your specific thing. I think most of the ethanol plants are digging their own wells, and that means that they're not paying anyone. It's not groundwater is largely unregulated and unpriced around the country, so that it's actually not under the control of the water company, unless the water company pumps it up itself and is then selling it through its own pipes. People who have their own wells are not paying the water company generally for their own water. But in general, I think this question of pricing and higher prices to induce conservation has some validity, but it's a little bit overrated. I think that what really has to happen is that we need a whole new ethic that's going on about how we're relating to our environment. And I think it's an ethic that actually has a lot of great advantages because we'll improve our water supply. We can live on better on less, and we have the possibility of improving the resource itself. There are a lot of technologies that are now being brought in for conservation, but we're also seeing a situation around the country in which, 70% of the water that is being used is generally going for agriculture. So a small savings in agriculture could actually transform the potential water scarcity that you have in urban areas. There's lots of, fungibility and how water is used. If you can save it in one place, then you can use it in another. And if you can clean it in one area, that makes it available again, rather than having polluted supplies that can't be used by anyone. And we're having that, across the Midwest. You've got very serious pesticide and fungicide pollution problems, We're not putting the priority on water, and it won't be a small rate increase that deals with this kind of conservation. It's going to mean dealing with the pollution problem of spreading enormous amounts of deadly chemicals on the soil. We're going to have to really think about how we do things in a different way in order to preserve our water supply.
All right, let's talk again with another caller. This is Urbana Line 3. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
I would like to support what you just recently said, that getting involved is the main thing. Whether price increases in water rates are going to do anything really significant depends on how much citizens are involved in it and how aware they are about protecting our groundwater, for example. And looking at the kind of negligence that currently is happening in funding research that goes into groundwater, it is quite obvious that the citizens are not really aware of the problem. That's where we fundamentally have to begin, by putting some amount of pressure on state and federal agencies to put the money where our priorities ought to be. One way or the other, we are paying the price. And it's not whether we pay through rate increase or through health care, ultimately, because the water resources are damaged. And that awareness, I think, is important. I just thought I'll put my penny into that. Thank you.
One thought that question makes me think of is really in the past few decades, I think, the idea of public service and a public service like water has really been denigrated, has been, we think of the public sector and a public service as being people who are greedily helping themselves in office or in wasting money people who don't work hard or all those kinds of things. And it really is an amazing stereotype that has come into existence, which has very little basis in fact. But you see it that we have our teachers start being blamed for problems in the schools. People who are, you know, completely dedicated to their work and are working as hard as they can and buying their kids supplies are blamed because our schools are failing. We have public transport workers who are blamed because the buses are old. Again and again, because we're not actually putting money into these systems and because we are also dismissing the whole idea of public service in favor of the private takeover of virtually everything, we really are losing the momentum of something that was really basic to this country, which was the idea of dedicating yourself to serving the public, of doing something because you want to serve the community, as opposed to doing something for your own private profit. And we are paying the price for this sort of psychological change of the American ideology, if you will, that we're no longer trusting public service. We have to return to an idea of public service as being something important and honorable and basic. And I think that it's going to be our communities that are the ones that lead the way to this kind of change of thinking.
All right. Well, we're trying to get one more caller in here, certainly in the time that's remaining. Rantoul, line one.
Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a fabulous subject you're covering, and it's one of great concern. Two things. My greatest concern is a privatization. I'm for privatization and less government control. However, this privatization is foreign-controlled. Foreigners have no interest in Americans. We become pawns of them, and they'll stick it to us. I mean, you know, we could talk all day on that subject, but that's my major concern. Americans are Americans, and we're at odds with the rest of the world and our culture. And then the second thing, when you got a teenager that's taking too long a shower, all you got to do is simply turn off the hot water, and they'll get out quickly. And I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
It sounds kind of drastic, but yeah, I imagine it would work.
You're going to have one angry hornet of a teenager if you do that. One of the things that that reminds me of is that there's one of the other controversies that has taken place about water and sort of commodification of water has been the whole issue of bottled water. Companies like Nestle coming into a number of cities all around the country and pumping up water from the aquifers, from springs, in order to put them in plastic bottles. And this has become now a real sort of touchstone issue. And the way I think about it is that I'm not so much worried about somebody having a bottle of water, but that there's a message in the bottle. And the message is that we can get our drinking water and our clean water at 1,000 times more than you can get it from the tap in terms of what you pay. And if you have the money, you can buy your way out of a problem that's a social problem, that's a community problem that we all have to take care of, which is making water universally affordable and available and accessible to everyone in the country, because that is a basic commitment of any kind of civilization. And you know, one of the groups that have been there have been a number of groups that have been following this bottled water. I wanted to mention a few of them that have been doing a great job for people who want, other than our book and our movie, resources. There's a group called Food and Water Watch in Washington, D.C., which has been lobbying for a federal trust fund on water to actually fund the improvements. And I think it's something like $500 billion of improvements in our water infrastructure that we need in the next 20 years. Foodandwaterwatch.org. And in Boston, there's Corporate Accountability International, which has been pushing very hard on the bottled water question. And I think their website is corporateaccountability.org. And those are some sites for people who want more information about this. These issues, which are just really, we're finding exploding all over the country as people now grapple with climate change and drought. What's happening in the southeast right now is a real eye-opener for people in a part of the country who always thought that they had plenty of water. And now suddenly you're seeing a real crisis in Georgia and Alabama and Florida and a battle over who's going to have the limited amount of water that flows down the Chattahoochee River and eventually reaches reaches the sea, going through Alabama and Florida. Mm-hmm. And well, it's a serious problem.
We have come to the point where, for this hour, we're going to have to stop. So I just again want to tell people, if you're interested in reading some more on this issue, look for the book I mentioned a couple of times. The title is Thirst: Fighting the Corporate Theft of Our Water. It's published by Wiley or Jossie Bass, one way or the other. That's the publisher. You can find the book in the bookstore. Our guest, Alan Snitow, his last name spelled S-N-I-T-O-W. He is a documentary filmmaker and journalist. He's one of the authors of the book. Also, he and his filmmaking partner, Deborah Kaufman, made a documentary that aired as part of the PBS series POV on this very same subject. And thanks very much for giving us some of your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And also want to mention, in the second hour of the show, we will continue to talk about many of these same issues. We're going to talk about water management and drought issues. So I hope you can stay with us for the next part of the show. Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 25th anniversary of offering licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana. Bodywork Associates now has an office inside the Oasis Center in the Illini Union. Right now, we will take a break, as we usually do, for an update on the markets and news. Also, we'd like you to know we're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of Alice and Robert Campbell. We're going to go here for a minute, but we'll be back, so stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
At 10:59 with this market update, I'm Tom Rogers. The wheat market's strong today. In fact, the nearby December contract in Chicago had been limited up for a few seconds. Drawn the strong export news for India and Pakistan, as well as some continuing weather concerns. December wheat in Kansas City is up 27¾ cents a bushel right now at 8.28. July at 7.25¼, up 14½. December wheat in Chicago now up 28 cents a bushel at 8.01½. March at 8.22½, up 26½. July wheat 6.98, up 10½. Down day today.